previously on adventure.
You walked up a path and were met with the sight of 5 dragonborn, and one of the ones on the cot was Thrace. Redfield, you feel a hand grab you by the throat, and you look up, and Samuel is the one holding you down. During the war, it was you that snuck in and tried to murder my master. Explain yourself, Jonah. Did you have anything to do with them being here?
Absolutely not.
Do you intend to help me get them out of here?
Absolutely, I do.
My master's family just aren't strong enough to move, and I do not have the power to be able to open a portal big enough to rescue them all. Auric has the power to open a portal and bring them home. But if he will not, then you will need to rip his heart from his chest, and I will be able to use his power to open a portal from here.
That's big doings.
That's a lot. I just got through this whole thing where I'm trying to be a better person, and then...
You told me you would help my king.
I will absolutely
you
help.
You owe my king this.
Just us for a second, Samuel. You're asking us to kill something. We can handle it, okay?
Good, because that never used to be a problem for you, Jonah, or Redfield, or whatever your name is.
There's no Jonah. I don't know why you keep calling him that. It's Redfield.
You got my name right.
At last.
At last. All I've ever wanted.
So will you help?
Can you just go over the heart stomping thing again? What was that little bit?
I have the power to open portals, but I'm not strong enough to open a portal. Yep.
All right.
Auric, if he is willing, is able to open a portal and can bring the royal family back.
However, there is
a very good chance that whatever you do or say, he may never be willing to bring his family back. So the only way it could work is if you were to rip his heart from his chest and pull it on the floor of the lair at the Dragonborn Kingdom, and I can use the power from there to open the portal and bring my bring the royal family back to where they should be.
What if we just slice him in half and take it out that way? Is that okay?
It's fine. You can take that out whichever way you want.
Okay.
It sounds like we can either go the way of Kill Bill here or go the way of the sting. And I'd much rather fool or persuade him to open the portal than maybe get some of us murdered.
I would say this is definitely, yes, stuff you will need to factor in down the road, that there may not possibly be simply a big bad fight ending to this story.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to help you. Problem is, Auric is over on that side, and we're on this side.
Yes. Wow. As my queen told me, and at this point the queen looks over with like the biggest stink eye you have ever seen in your life, because Samuel clearly just said something that she wasn't aware of. So he looks back at her and looks back at you and knows he's gonna get the shit kicked out of him very soon. And he says, well, as my queen said, not far from here, we were told that there is a place that you are able to leave the Shadowfell. It's a very short walk from here, and you should be able to find your way out through this small building.
I'm hearing a lot of ifs and shoulds, and I'm not getting a nice fuzzy feeling in my belly.
I am asking you to help your friend, to help the royal family, because one of you owes the royal family this much.
Right, but look, is a friend of a friend of a friend really even a friend?
I don't like this small man.
Yes, we owe Thrace a lot. She's helped us through many tough situations. We have no problem in helping.
Which one's she again?
The one whose pocket you were riding in when I shrunk you down to a little tiny person, which is coming any second now, unless you shut up.
I think this is like some epic destiny stuff like I'm supposed to be doing or something, but like who's this Thrace person? What's going on? Are we going to stop like a bad person?
And Samuel's head snaps around because it's like he's totally forgotten that Balak was even there. And it's like it's shocked that he was like, "Oh." Hello. I'm sorry. Do you know this man?
He's new, okay?
Okay, Jonah.
They're my friends.
Well, that's debatable.
All right, and Henley points at Redfield and he looks at Balak and goes, "Pop quiz, what's his name?"
Balbo.
That's close, I think. Right. Yeah.
Balbo Biggins.
Yeah. Good enough for me.
It's Balbo, right?
Balak Brightwood. Balak Brightwood.
Many bees, yes. Many we were bees. Close, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bob's actually writing it down in real life, so he doesn't forget it.
Alec Brightwood.
The Brightwood, it was totally out of my head.
So at this point, you are able to leave. You've had a long rest, so all your hit points and everything is restored. Mm. And there is, you walked one way into this camp, and there is one way out of this camp. So whenever you are ready.
Wait, you mentioned before that you could do, like, portals and whatnot. Can you get us closer with one of your portals?
No, because if I could, I would have. But I haven't, so I can't.
I didn't know if you were limited in your scope of where you
I'm not us. Limited, small man.
Whatever you say.
All right, so I think it's time to... I think we only have one option.
Walk the
Leave
walk.
Leave the way we came.
Go back. Yeah. Go back and just hang out in this place.
Yep. At the pub.
That's all we're going to do.
Climb back up to the plateau.
Before we go, Balak.
Yeah.
I won't speak for all of everyone here, but I think most of us have investment in saving Thrace or saving this family. If you are able to help us get back into the other world, you are under no obligation to stay with us. If you want to go on and move on, you are more than welcome to do that.
So we're not friends?
There's 10% of Justin's face right now. Like, is he kicking me out already?
I'm using it.
I have to tell Justin in like a character way to soften the blow that this is your last episode.
Harsh.
That's your opt out. Yeah.
No, but I just, we all in one way or another have a choice in this adventure. You sort of just kind of fell head first into us.
Well, I mean, you guys are going where I'm going, right? And, you know, I'm pretty sure that the stars are aligning, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Important things happen around me.
Okay.
And he gets like a little confident, kind of.
Oh. In an adorable way, right?
If you want to come with us, it'll just be 5 gold pieces apiece for you to pay us to join us.
Oh, let me see here. Okay, and he starts kind of like going through his bag here. Okay. And he like starts handing out like 5 gold apiece.
And I just look at Julian and Redfield like this is perfect.
Redfield gives you like a
right
little
where
like
we
a,
want him.
Yeah, Redfield like puts his hand behind his back to give you like a little secret high five.
And I'm shaking my head in dismay.
Yet still taking the money?
Yeah. Yes.
Balak, not so Brightwood, am I right?
That's terrible. So Samuel just says one last thing, which is, I'm very surprised that you still have friends at this point, Jonah.
Man, he's not laying off, huh?
I hope you really have changed, but if you haven't, I would warn all three of you to watch your backs.
Like I said, whatever, let's just get on with it.
I'm glad it's somebody else than me for a change.
I think the worst thing I could do right now is say, no, you should trust me.
Yeah. we trust you.
So you're leaving the camp?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as you walk out the camp, you look back and you see Samuel tenderly holding Thrace's hand. They're clearly very close. Not that close. just
Thrace comes out. Thrace pokes her head out. We're not that close.
Okay, so you walk down this canyon, and sure enough, after about an hour of walking, very uneventful, gray, desolate still, the canyon opens up, and you see a large gray plateau. And about 500 yards ahead of you on this plateau is a small marble structure in the middle of it. So just imagine, like, you know, you kind of come towards the end of an open tunnel as such, mm-hmm. and there's just a big open space at about 500 yards, a small marble building, like a little mausoleum.
Okay.
Yeah, almost
I'm
like a little...
like something that's only 2 feet high.
Like, you know, maybe like 15 feet high, 20 feet wide. Just, you know, just it okay. kind of just looks like a small mausoleum.
We're 500
yards? About 500 yards. You can see it clearly. It seems to be a very deserted and desolate plateau.
I'm going to roll an investigation check, see if I can get any more information.
Okay.
Oh, that's a critical miss, everybody.
You look out, and it is indeed a desolate plateau. Yeah.
Yeah. How far away is the structure, you think, from where we're standing?
About 500 yards.
500 yards, okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay. I'll roll an investigation check as well.
Okay.
Then 8 plus something else. I think it's plus 0.
Okay. So you look out and you see a desolate plateau with a small marble structure in the middle of it.
My stats got changed. I used to have a plus in intelligence. I don't anymore. So
there's like no plants around, right?
No plants. There's really no sign of life whatsoever.
Why?
That's
not?
All Balak's looking around for.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. This is. Bob rolled an 11. So he looks out, and to the naked eye.
Yeah, he rolled an 11, but he's got a freaking huge bonus on this.
On which one?
It's intelligence.
Plus 4?
Plus 4. And let me see your sheet for a second, because I want to make sure that you're not... Yeah, Pop, you have plus 8 on all investigation checks.
Oh, okay.
That's a 19.
It's a 19.
Okay, so again, you look out to the naked eye. There doesn't appear to be anything around. It really is just a wide open space... with a small marble building in the middle.
Still.
No.
All right.
I guess we need to get closer.
I guess I should go out there.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did Hendley just volunteer to go first?
He's getting better, too. Have you noticed?
Oh.
And he just, full sprint, just starts running out to see what that thing's all about.
And I'm going to have Balak turn into a panther and just run alongside Hendley.
Awesome. I was hoping you were going to do that.
Yep. He just runs forward, just turns into a Black Panther, and runs alongside.
And Henley's looking. It's the classic double take. He's running. He looks at the Panther. He smiles at the Panther. And then keeps running and looks back like, what the holy hell? And then I think he's going to attempt to leap onto the Panther.
Okay.
Which so I will roll an acrobatics check for.
Yes. And then Balak, I guess, can you decide to try
Buck
and
him
throw him off? Yeah.
14 plus 5 is a 19.
Oh, I'm definitely going to... Can I do like a dex check or something to try to like move out of the way?
So, yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So yeah, try and dodge him.
Is this a dex contest then?
It's only... I only got an 8.
Okay. So I successfully mounted you.
I'm not sure if I...
Can take the weight?
Per the rules of D&D, I think a mount has to be like a little bit bigger.
Okay.
So, because Henley's just like a half elf, right? Like kind of normal, average size person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you'd probably just like land on me and like we both stop.
All right. So honestly, I feel like that's what should happen. So Henley takes one, like does a double take and realizes that Balak has done his trick and turned into a panther and leaps onto Balak's back, at which point Balak's four legs collapse underneath him and they both go sprawling to the ground.
Oh, well,
that went well.
Redfield and Julian are watching from the opening onto the plateau, just shaking their heads in disbelief at the ridiculousness.
I'm slowly walking up towards. Just gonna make my way up as they go.
We've now caught up since they've had this crash.
Yes.
I'm just running towards that.
Well, how about
structure.
does Balak have anything to say to Hendley after he so rudely squished him?
He stays in the panther form and just like kind of like rolls out of the way and just is like kind of like growling a little bit at first, and then he turns back into his human form and he's like, I don't think that worked very well. Sorry.
I'm just gonna keep running.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just both just run.
And we speed towards the marble structure.
Okay, so all four of you at this point have reached the marble structure, yes?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in front of you, the marble structure, you're standing on kind of a, you've gone up a couple of steps, you're standing on what would be the porch, I guess, and there is a door in front of you with a door handle.
We should obviously knock this door off its hinges, right? Smash it as hard as we can.
All right, before you do that, I'm going to cast... Detect evil and good. 30-foot radius. Aberration. I can sense an aberration, a celestial, an elemental, a fae, a fiend, undead, or a magically desecrated or consecrated thing.
Thing? Like, as in creature or place?
I think it's anything. But let me
anything?
Let me just make sure. What's page 231? Let me just check.
Okay.
All of the pages where the spells were in.
Actually, I did that. Yeah.
Are you digging Andy's character sheet there?
I love it, man.
Yes.
All right, cool. Awesome. Yeah. He was really excited to help out because
he's a listener. So it lasts for 10 minutes. For the duration, you know if there is an aberration, celestial, elemental, fae, fiend, or undead within 30 feet of you, as well as where the creature is located. Similarly, you know if there is a place or object within 30 feet of you that has been magically consecrated or desecrated. The spell can penetrate most barriers, but it's blocked by 1 foot of stone, common metal, a thin sheet of lead, or 3 feet of wood or dirt.
Okay.
A thin sheet of lead blocks it, by the way. So if you're freaking Superman, I don't understand. Like
if you're at the dentist getting X-rays, they can tell there's nothing. I can't tell if you're evil
exactly.
or not. Okay.
All right.
Okay, so you're gonna cast that.
I cast it, yeah.
Okay, so you cast it, and it reveals that there's no creatures, as we've already discussed. There really doesn't seem to be anything living or dead or undead around here, but there's definitely something not normal about this building. It's not what it appears to be.
I have lost it. Identify.
Okay.
Which is, you choose one object you must touch throughout the casting of the spell. If it's a magic item or some other magic imbued object, you learn its properties, how to use them, whether it requires attunement to use, how many charges, you learn whether any spells are affecting it.
Okay. So you cast that on...
The mausoleum.
You touch the marble on the mausoleum.
Yes.
Okay. Again, honestly, what you can tell is that it's clearly a magical place, and there's clearly something more to it than just what appears to be a marble mausoleum. But other than that,
mm-hmm. All right,
there's something going on there. I can't quite figure what. But
all right,
this is not what it appears to be.
It's something. Not good, I'm going to guess.
So I think Hendley should go in.
No, I lost it.
So Redfield just walks up and tries the door handle.
Okay. The door handle opens. And you pull the door open and you look in. You see it very improbably leads to a carpeted and lushly decorated hallway. When you look in, you see the hallway is about 10 feet wide. And about 30 feet down this hallway is another door.
All right.
Malik, is that carpet a friend of yours?
feeling quite fearless, Henley takes his finger, touches his nose, and just starts to run towards the door.
Okay, so Henley's going into the hallway?
So 30 feet down to the new door, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And without investigating, just carelessly tries to fling it open.
that door is locked.
Hey, how's it going down there?
I got it. Nothing to see here. I'm just taking my time, you know.
And he like tries to jiggle it again. Nothing's happening, right?
No dice.
So he's gonna try and break the door down.
Okay.
With his body.
Okay.
By getting another running start.
So I guess a strength check? Try and break this door down, Hendley.
15 plus 0.
And you take a running leap at this door, and basically you just bounce right back off of it.
I had a feeling that would happen.
There is no damage to the door. There is nothing about this door has changed.
While Henley is bouncing himself against the door, Redfield starts to look around the rest of the 30-foot long room to see if there's anything there. And I'm going to roll, actually, a perception check to see if I can perceive, you know, anything around, if I can have a feeling about anything that's there,
okay.
If I can sense anything,
yes.
You know, areas. 17.
Okay, so you definitely can tell that there is more in this room than you're able to visually see right now.
This room is more than meets the eye.
Oh yeah? And can I take a perception, too?
Yep.
While I'm looking around? I just got a 16.
Okay, so again, you're looking around, yeah. And you can definitely sense that this isn't just an empty hall, that there's something in this hallway, but you cannot see anything yet. So as Julian, being the last member of the team, as Julian walks in, the door that you walked through slams shut, and you're now in the hallway, and you hear a click from the door that Hendley has been bouncing off of. You hear just a subtle click.
You want to try that door again, Henley?
I've got my thieves' tools ready to go. I'm going to pick this lock. And
and he just kind of like leans up against the door.
And it opens. Huh?
First try.
Hello, listeners. This is Justin, and right off the bat, I'd just like to say sorry for being late. Bobby and I both had a couple things that kept us behind with our editing. We'd like to apologize, but just keep in mind that, you know, if we haven't been around for a while, we are not going to be stopping suddenly. We have a lot actually recorded. Looking like the end of Jackie's campaign is coming soon, which hopefully all of us are going to get together and actually play all in the room, same room, for the first time ever. Yeah, because pretty much, yeah, every time at least one person has been remote playing. We don't have a Henley Reads this week, so I'm just going to keep this quick and thank everybody, the listeners, of course. Keep those iTunes reviews coming in. We have a bunch more that'll be in next episode, hopefully. And they would like to always thank Battle Bards and Tabletop Audio and Plate Mail Games for letting us and, Roll20 and, you know, a lot of people use their sound effects. So thanks again for that. And before I just send it back to the rest of the episode, just thanks again for listening. And you can always reach out to us and talk to us on Twitter. It's at DND Adventure. That's at DND Adventure. And in the show notes, it has all the rest of our personal contacts and everything. So if you ever want to drop a line, feel free.
He opens this second door and you all look through, and in front of you is a carpeted and lushly decorated hallway. It's approximately 10 feet wide, and 30 feet down the hallway is another door.
Wait a bloody second, we just did this.
Okay, so let's just try something. Let's all walk in this room. Come on, everybody get in.
Okay.
Everybody get in.
Okay. We're coming.
Okay.
Fine, whatever.
All right.
So as all four of you walk through, the previous door shuts, and the door at the other end goes click.
Okay.
Manly has that, something's not right, but I'm going to try it anyway. And he walks over to the door and touches the handle, and what happens?
He turns the handle, and he opens the door, and there is a lush, carpeted and lushly decorated hallway. It's 10 feet. Yes.
Is it approximately 10 feet wide and 30 feet long?
It
and
is door indeed. At the end? It is indeed 10 feet wide.
Is it carpeted?
And 30 feet down the hallway is another door. However, it looks slightly different this time. So if you want to, if you may want to have another look around.
18.
Oh, so as you all walk into this room, you see the door slam behind you. But this time you don't hear a click. What you do hear, or rather feel, is a small sideboard suddenly kind of appear next to you, almost like it was always there. So now
a
you're
sideboard?
In a
sideboard?
A sideboard, like a console table.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I'd
like
love an aperitif.
So yeah,
like
British.
A small,
table. I got to catch up on my British slang. I'm sorry.
and some digestives. All right,
so
yes.
It is about 3 feet tall. It is a flat top, about 4 feet long, just with four legs.
Okay.
And so if you would like to take a look.
I've rolled an 18. Oh, that was what that was. You were telling me
yes.
What we were seeing.
So it went, yep. So now you're all look around and able to see this sideboard. And if you look closer, you'll see that on top of it, there is, and get ready for this next reference.
Okay.
There are four small bottles with stoppers in the top.
Mm.
The first bottle says, eat me. The second bottle says, drink me. The third bottle says, snort me. And the fourth bottle says, suppository.
Okay.
what does it look like that's in them?
It's just that they're kind of a brown glass. You can't really see what's in them. It's just four bottles with stoppers in the top.
I was picturing nipples. I was picturing bottles with nipples.
No, just like apothecary bottles, like four small brown glass bottles.
Sure.
First one says eat me, second one says drink me, third one says snort me, fourth one says suppository.
Two of these remind me of an old story. Two, however,
remind you of me.
All right. I know that you might be thinking I'm going to just start eating and drinking and snorting all this. And believe me, I want to. But I think I might want to talk this one out, because I'm not quite sure what's in that, and I want to make sure I cherish my body, because it's a temple. I'm just kidding. And he takes eat me.
So what does Henley do?
He grabs the eat me bottle and starts to shake out whatever it is into his hand.
Okay, so the eat me bottle. So it's like a chewy liquid. It's like a, you know, kind of like
milk.
Exactly. Think about chewy milk.
Oh god.
Chewy milk.
So a chunk of that comes out in his hand, right?
Yep.
And I guess he smells it.
It doesn't smell great.
Yeah, it doesn't smell great, and he kind of shrugs his shoulders and pops in his mouth and just chugs the rest of the bottle.
Okay, so you do that. You pull it in your hand, you look at it, throw it down your throat, drink the rest of it. It feels and tastes a lot like sour milk. It gives you a warm feeling. But as you look down, you realize you now appear to be wearing large iron boots that are strapped onto your feet very, very tightly.
What are those?
Oh, neat trick.
Yeah.
There's now three bottles remaining.
Redfield is like down, like basically on his hands and knees, like looking at the boots. I want to investigate the boots, see if I can see anything about them. 18.
So they appear to be made of solid plate iron. Like there doesn't appear to be any straps, any laces, any way that they logically could have got onto his feet. So there certainly isn't a way to easily get them off of his feet.
Does it hurt, Henley?
Not that I can tell. Okay. I'm a wee bit heavier.
Gonna affect your stealthy.
Yes, they're heavy. They're heavy enough that he's able to, with a lot of effort, pick them up off the floor about an inch.
Okay. So here's the question: maybe we should have him drink all of them.
Since he's already in bad shape.
Yeah,
I think that's a fine plan.
There's not any reason for all of us to get screwed over, right?
What do you think, Henley? One of them could actually solve your problem.
All right, so he grabs the drink me bottle.
Okay. He grabs the drink me bottle, but he is unable to remove the stopper.
Oh. And then he grabs the snort me bottle.
He is unable. It's the snort me bottle. He is unable to remove the stopper.
I'll know how this works. What? I'm not even going to try the last one.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you even going to grab for the last one?
Nope. I think one of you blokes need to do it.
You might just try inserting that last bottle completely.
Yeah, it doesn't say the suppository is inside the bottle.
I was anticipating the four of you arguing about who had to do what, and Hendley's just like, nope, I'm eating that one quick.
Well, honestly, Redfield looks around and he goes, okay. I get it. And he grabs the drink me bottle, pops the cork off, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And swigs it down his throat.
Okay, so Redfield picks up the bottle, takes out the stopper, easily removes the stopper. You drink from the bottle, but what comes out is like a strange half-smoke, half-liquid drink. A lightheadedness takes over you, and you start to float slowly up towards the ceiling of the hallway. So you're floating right now.
Where's your broom at?
It's in my bag, but I think I'm just going to float off the broom.
I feel like this is the one person who took this that's really not actually that bothered about floating
no,
on the ceiling.
No. Also, I didn't even really care what happened here. Don't like things in my nose, and I don't like things in my butt. So both of those things were not good for me.
And I feel like Julian and Balak
in my nose.
Julian and Balak were really slow off the draw on this one.
Well, yeah, I actually start just kind of like, Balak starts like turning and looking at Julian like,
We could do rock, paper, scissors. Do you know that one?
I'll let you do that.
I don't know that game.
Okay, well, then we won't do that one because you could go badly. How about we'll flip a coin? Heads I win, tails you lose.
I do have a pretty good wisdom score. I'm just going to roll for myself. I got a 17. Maybe that wouldn't trick me. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Then just because I will go for a suppository.
Oh, Julian is taking one for the team right here. So
someone has to be the leader.
So who first? There's snort me and there's suppository. Who's going first? Julian?
You want to do it
Julian,
at the same time?
How are you going to be the leader when you're so far behind?
Okay, anyway, getting distracted. Yes. So we have two bottles left. Redfield is currently floating on the ceiling. Hendley is currently anchored to the floor with some rather large iron boots. And there are two bottles left.
Balak, I'm thinking because you might be able to save us, I will go first.
Sure. I'd definitely save you guys.
That's what I'm figuring.
That sounds like something I'd say, and I'm not crazy about it.
So who's going first?
I shall.
Okay. Julian is.
Going to avert. Redfield averts his eyes.
So,
but wait, are you sure that Redfield doesn't kind of peek through his fingers, though? Yeah.
That seems more like a Henley thing to me.
Yes. So, okay, so bottle number four, the last bottle on the line. You Julian opens the stopper without any problems, and he does what needs to be done and pops it up his bum.
What's even annoying, I take it back, or is it funnier? I make unbreaking eye contact with him the whole time he does it.
as I grimace, you've got a small grin on your face.
Redfield is floating on the ceiling and looking on waveringly down at Julian. So Julian bends over and pops it up his bum. You hear a pop sound, and a small red imp appears in front of you on the sideboard. It giggles maniacally and dances a jig while pointing at you. You detect no other change.
And we all can see that, or just he can see it?
Yes.
You all see it. Okay. You can all see the little red imp, but then it goes pop.
It's gone.
And
who
it's
was
gone.
That?
I don't know.
Was that a bot angel?
It's a good name for an episode.
Okay. So we're now on bottle number 3. Snort me.
Okay. Balak just goes up and takes the top off.
Okay. So you take the top off and you pour out a purple tinged powder. You pour it onto the sideboard and take a big old sniff of the pile.
Hold
on. Before he does that, can Henley hand him newly fashioned business cards with Henley's name on it to help him cut the powder?
Sure. I know where the hell Henley found business cards, but sure.
They just say his name. There's no other information.
Just Lil Peen.
Balaka just shakes his head. Sure, takes it. And he goes for it. Just bends over to the table and...
Okay. You don't even need sound effects for that one, man.
You have an overwhelming feeling of euphoria, and you think...
yes, okay.
And you just... you think you may be able to feel the rippling of muscles beneath your cloak. You may now add a plus 10 to all of your strength checks until the next long rest. So, all four of you, you do your bottles, and... the door.
One of us got a way better deal than the rest. I'm just saying.
The door at the beginning of the hallway has disappeared. And as you watch, the door at the other end also fades out of existence. All of a sudden, water begins to gush into the room from the previously unseen vents in the walls. The person floating is safe for now, but the person with iron boots has to make a dexterity saving throw right now. And if it's successful, there'll be a bubble of air within reach. If it's unsuccessful, you have 1 minute to be saved by your friends.
13.
Oh, very good. You were just, you're lucky. So you are still stuck on the bottom of the room, but your boots are holding you down, but there are occasional air bubbles that are floating past that are just enough to keep you conscious.
Good.
The room is now entirely filled with water. But just as you start to panic, the walls pop apart and float away from you. And you're now in a large body of water.
I didn't see this coming.
This is not panic?
Yeah. Well, you're floating
upwards.
This
is like a literal nightmare of mine, what are you doing right now?
So the walls are just like, floating away like they were pieces of cardboard. Mm-hmm. And you float to the top, Redfield, rather quickly because you're buoyant. Julian and Balak, both Balak with his now rippling muscles and feeling of euphoria, bursts through the surface. Julian swims up too, but Henley is still stuck on the bottom. And you need to find a way of getting him. Well, I mean, it's up to you.
Do we have to?
He has air bubbles. So it's up to you. If you'd like to continue the quest with Henley, you're going to need to free him from these iron boots.
Or is this really just sort of like a, the universe threw us a bone sort of situation?
Exactly.
Gee, I thought they were kicking me out.
All right.
How big a body of water is this anyway? How deep are we?
You can see him on the bottom. And he's attached to, like, the bottom of the hallway, which is resting on the bottom of this body of water. But you've definitely swam at least 20 feet up to break the surface.
I was just thinking, how much would it fuck with Jackie's campaign if I went full Cary Elwes and just chopped off both of my feet and then had to do the rest of the game with no feet?
Let's not take options off the table this early on, okay?
Yeah. Totally.
It's D&D. You can fix feet
exactly.
that get cut off.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Walls are gone, right? They're nowhere
within. The walls have floated away, but they are still there. Like, the bottom of the hallway is what Hendley is currently standing on. So the other three walls are kind of floating on the surface.
Next to us.
I'm going
to
go in the bathroom around. While you guys figure out how to save me.
Okay.
These air bubbles, like, I tell you what I'm picturing. It's like Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, yes. You're swimming and you're
just
about to
like,
die and hit the
exactly. Like, every 30 seconds, blip, blip, blip.
Yep. So I do have... Where is it? Control water. 100-foot cube of water. Action to repeat or change effect. Flood part water. Let me look up. 227. 100 feet is enough, right?
That's enough, yeah. And what is it does?
Yeah, I've got to make sure I know. I can control, move it, I used it when I was trying to save myself from those trees. I tried to like create like a wall.
Okay.
Until the spell ends, you control any freestanding water inside an area you choose that is a cube up to 100 feet on a side. You can choose from any of the following effects. These are different things. There's like different things. As an action on your turn, you can repeat the same effect or choose a different one. Flood, you cause the water level of all standing water in the area to rise by as much as 20 feet. If the area includes a shore, the flooding water spills over the floor. I definitely don't want to do that. Part water, you cause water in the area to move apart and create a trench. The trench extends across the spell's area, and the separated water forms a wall on either side. The trench remains until the spell ends, or you choose a different effect. The water then slowly fills in the trench over the course of the next round until the normal water level is restored. Redirect flow, causing water flowing water area to move. Whirlpool.
You could just do a whirlpool with Henley at the bottom.
Yeah, I could definitely do that. But I could just make sure he stays down there. I have a cool-ish plan.
Okay.
I don't know if Brian's back yet.
I was going to say, does Henley need to be in on this? Oh, okay, cool.
Okay. So, Henley is at the bottom of this water?
Yep.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
He's standing at the bottom on what was the floor of this hallway,
right,
which is resting on the bed of this body of water.
Okay. So, how far below us
is he? 20 feet.
20 feet. Okay. So, I'm going to cast Control Water. And I'm going to use the part water effect, which means I can cause water in the area to move apart and create a trench. The trench extends across the spell's area, and the separated water forms a wall on either side. The trench remains until the spell ends, or you choose a different effect of the spell.
Excellent.
The spell
so like
lasts,
Moses, right?
Yeah, the spell lasts up to 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm going to part the water, Rifle's going to part the water, and then... grab his broom out of his bag and toss the broom down to Henley and tell him to get on it and fly away. Because the broom can, I think we...
The broom can, yeah.
It's like 300
if he's,
pounds.
If he's able to lift his feet an inch off the floor, then they can't weigh more than a person. The broom can carry him with the iron boot.
So Redfield... throws the broom down at Henley, trying to get it as close to him as possible, obviously. So I don't know if you want me to roll to see how close I get it. I don't know what you want me to do, but...
I would say... What are you... Like, you're throwing it from... You're floating in the water, right?
Floating in the water. My idea would be is I'm kind of looking over the side of the trench, almost like a cliff.
Okay,
so I have my hand free.
Yes.
And I'm going to attempt...
Okay, so throw it down there.
In the open air, in essence.
In the open air, yeah.
So do a athletics check?
I would say dex is usually for like thrown objects and like aiming and stuff like that. So I don't know. So
you're trying to land it right next to him.
As close to
him
as possible because he can't move very fast. I mean, we do have 10 minutes, but I don't want it to take 10 minutes. So that's not 3 plus 2, that's 5.
Okay, so you throw it down there. And it actually does land right on Hendley's head, at which point it bounces off of his head and lands about 10 feet away.
Oh. Eyes up.
All right. I gotta remember the name of this thing.
Oh, Mage Hand?
No, Henley's gonna reach in his pocket and find his little blue ball that will teleport him.
Oh.
And
okay.
And he finds that thing, and he throws it at the broom.
So now you have
about
the.
That.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, and I gave it to you.
I know. I know.
So now you have the broom.
Yep. And I pick it up, and I guess I'm trying to lift my feet off the ground now that I can breathe. And does the thing take off with me on it?
Okay. So, Henley, you rise up out of this trench, go a little bit higher. Your friends are floating in the water. And now that you have freed Henley and you're all able to look around and Henley is able to see, you're actually only about 30 feet from a shore. You see there's like a sandy beach and there's a grass line. And at the top of the beach is a collection of small huts that looks like some kind of village. And approaching the village is a horde of whites.